All right, y'all, welcome to the Scott Horton Show. I'm the director of the Libertarian Institute, editorial director of antiwar.com, author of the book Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and the brand new Enough Already, Time to End the War on Terrorism. And I've recorded more than 5,500 interviews since 2003, almost all on foreign policy, and all available for you at scotthorton.org. You can sign up for the podcast feed there, and the full interview archive is also available at youtube.com/Scott Horton Show. Okay, you guys, introducing David T. Pine, former U.S. Army Headquarters Staff Officer. And here he is writing at Substack, D. Pine, that's P-Y-N-E, dpine.substack.com. And he also writes regularly over at the National Interest, nationalinterest.org. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, happy to have you here. Very interesting piece you have here. Response to Ukrainian government decision to include me, that's you, on a list of 28 high-profile Americans accused of promoting Russian propaganda narratives. So, obviously, first of all, I'm jealous. They must not be paying attention to me just because I'm busy writing a book about it instead of posting every day. That must be it. And then, secondly, also, I'm curious, former U.S. Army HQ staff officer. What rank is that?
Before we start here
on your inclusion in this weird list.
So I only served in the Army for 3 years. I then served as a staff officer as a civilian on Army headquarters staff. And I was in charge of all international R&D agreements with the former Soviet Union, the Middle East, and a whole bunch of other countries.
Yeah, right, fair enough. You know, it's important people know who we're talking about here, who we're talking to. And then, so you wrote for the National Interest, which is hardly a radical organization. They're much more, you know, in the tradition of sort of Nixonian, Kissingerian, realpolitik, as opposed, sort of, kind of, opposed to neoconservatism and liberal interventionism, although there's a bit of that there, too. There's a home for realists there as well at the National Interest. And so I guess you have a pretty good idea what it was that you wrote that got you in trouble with the Ukrainian government here, huh?
I do. Yeah, absolutely. So back in, I think it was either late March or early April, I published my first peace proposal, a plan for the end to the Russo-Ukrainian war. And that's when they accused me of being a Russian agent. I later learned I saw a post on April 5th. It was an article which misspelled my name, but accused me of having been in the pay of the Kremlin for years. So that was news to me. I never had any contact with the Russian government.
Jesus, seems like you might have had a conversation with the FBI about that too, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. So just for your listeners, so that the plan that I came up with, which has since been modified, I in an article I published on the National Interest on the 18th of June, was kind of a 15-point plan, but the gist of it was that Ukraine would all the Russian troops would be withdrawn from Ukraine, other than the portion of the Donbass region they already occupy, and of course Crimea, which is part of Russia, and it's never going to change. I should also mention that the day two of the Russian invasion, that the Russians first began providing their peace terms. So the Russians have actually been the most motivated, curiously, the most motivated for peace since the beginning of the invasion, which indicates that, you know, the neoconservatives are always talking about how, Russia has this plan to invade and take control and annex all of Ukraine, and then they're going to keep going. It's going to be like, you know, Stalin in Soviet days during World War II, when he annexed parts of nine countries and got away with it, and then turned a bunch of other ones into satellite states in Central and Eastern Europe. And the only changes they've made in that their peace offer, which is, you know, they would accept today, in my estimation, is that they are willing to agree to Ukraine's entry into the European Union. And they're also, they've given up their call for regime change, which they previously referred to as denazification. But other than that, they're looking for a modest reduction in the size of the Ukrainian armed forces, the elimination of all potential nuclear capable systems, including ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, anti-ship missiles, and then as well their strategic SAMs, which can be used in an ABM role, and independence for the Donbass, which I've suggested we could do in a popular referendum, and then of course Crimea and armed neutrality. That probably the most important requirement of all is that Ukraine would be neutral. It would be banned from any NATO ties whatsoever. It couldn't be a member of the Partnership of Peace. Couldn't have any arms shipments, additional arms shipments from NATO. And, they would essentially return to its status as a buffer state before the CIA-funded coup in the Euromaidan revolution of 2014.
Okay, now, I mean, obviously, I already agree with everything that you're saying there, but your opponents are going to say, oh, come on, you're just giving away the whole store to the Russians. All they have to do is start a war and you'll give in to all their demands, and that's appeasement and yep. Hitler 1938, et cetera, like that. So what about that?
Well, there's so many arguments against that. I would argue that it wasn't appeasement that sparked World War II, but it was the abandonment of the policy of appeasement. I mean, I think any logical and rational person that's non-biased, which there are very few, such as you and myself, would recognize that because, Hitler, of course, wanted only the, Danzig and Polish corridor. And that was pretty much the end of his, that's all he wanted in terms of Poland. He wanted Poland as an ally against the Soviets and whatnot. But in any case, if those demands had been met, there would have been no war with the West. He would have just driven east with the Soviet Union. And curiously, I find it extremely entertaining that Zelensky is being compared to Churchill because Churchill, of course, gave away the store to the Soviets, He gave away, the freedom of half of Europe, including Ukraine, to the Soviets, which had committed genocide. But the Russians, of course, are not committing genocide today. According to the UN, they've killed about 5,000 civilians. And according to an article I read on antiwar.com just earlier today, a lot of that is because the Russians have stationed their troops in created bases within schools and hospitals. So it's not like there's been any deliberate or systematic war crimes committed by Russia. Ukrainians have stationed their troops in schools and hospitals in Ukraine in order to maximize civilian casualties and support their claims of genocide in an effort to try to drag the U.S. and NATO into a third world war with Russia. It amazes me because the U.S. national security interest is completely oppositional to that of the Zelensky regime in that, what I just said, they're trying to get us into a potentially nuclear war with the Russian Federation. And we're seeing that now the neocons are trying to do a repeat of that in Taiwan with the current blockade crisis. But you're absolutely right. Any dissenting voices who dare challenge the neoconservative propaganda line, which is so popular in Congress, that we should avoid war with Russia or China, and that we should not be providing military aid to Ukraine, and that we should instead throw our substantial diplomatic heft in support of mediating a peace agreement with Russia, which we provide Ukraine only provides minor concessions, is immediately branded as an appeaser, a Kremlin agent, and I'm in good company. Senator Rand Paul obviously is one of our best foreign policy realists, and, you know, kind of anti-war senators in the Senate, of course. And he was put on their list merely for referring to Ukraine as a former part of the Soviet Union. Edward Luttwak was put on the list for the same reason that I did, proposing a popular referendum in the Donbass to vote on independence. But essentially, anyone who opposes anything other, you know, who doesn't support a solution based on total Russian military withdrawal from Crimea and the Donbass is branded a Kremlin agent.
Yeah.
Well, and it's amazing here, the overreach, where they're naming one of the most famous U.S. senators, former presidential candidate and representative and active duty National Guard officer Tulsi Gabbard, Colonel Douglas McGregor, one of the most famous retired military officers and critics, John Mearsheimer from the University of Chicago, widely considered the dean of the realist foreign policy school, or right there with his partner, Stephen Waltz, anyway, from Harvard. You guys are all just a bunch of Alger Hiss guys, I guess. And this is all a big, you know, the Venona files are going to prove you guilty yet. I guess we'll just have to wait. But so now, what is it exactly that it matters that they're putting you on this list? What exactly are they claiming about you? Is this really a setup for them to invoke the Assange precedent that any American violates any foreign country's law, no matter where in the world, including here in America, and we're subject to it, and you guys are under arrest? Is that it?
You know, there have been signs, you know, this Ukrainian Center for Countering Disinformation is part of the Russian Defense and National Security Ministry. And there are signs that it's been at least partially funded by the U.S. State Department or other U.S. agencies. And so there has been a theory presented, a conspiracy theory, which very well may be true, that the Biden administration, you know, provided some support or signed off on this Ukrainian blacklist or hit list. So what they've accused me of doing again is supporting peace between Russia and Ukraine, on the basis of minor territorial concessions to Russia. And if you read my proposal, it doesn't exactly say that. It says that there will be a popular referendum, and if the Donbass region votes against independence, then Ukraine gets to expel all Russian troops from its territory. And I don't consider Crimea to be part of Ukraine today. It's just a factor in reality. So they would essentially win the war without a single loss of one additional Ukrainian soldier. And, you know, for them, it's heresy because it's not 100% of what they're wanting. And when they're fighting a nuclear superpower with up to 8,000, you know, anywhere from 6,000 to 8,000 nuclear weapons, the idea that they could defeat Russia without any other country being willing to send their troops to fight alongside them is quite frankly absurd.
I know. I mean, this whole thing is just such a tragedy. You go back to right before the war started. All they were demanding was the implementation of the peace deal that our German and French partners signed with them back in 2015, essentially. And of course, a promise of no NATO expansion and missiles and a few other things that, you know, if you take the Russian listed demands from December, you might say, you know, oh, you don't think you're just going to give them the whole store or whatever. But you have to admit, unless you're just hell-bent on, you know, your agenda of getting into a conflict, you have to admit that that's a reasonable basis to start a discussion anyway. And the Americans, as my buddy Daryl Cooper says, they treat the Russians like they're just ISIS. Yeah, we don't negotiate with terrorists. You know, Putin is just Abu Bakr or al-Baghdadi, and we don't have to pay them any mind whatsoever, disregard any of their views. And then here we are. You know, they've already taken Kherson, which means that they're only, what, like 150 miles from Moldova at this point. And obviously taking Odessa would be a hell of a horrible slaughter, and God knows what would happen, I guess, if they do. But they could. They're not far, and at the rate they're going, they're going to end up taking the whole southern coast, and then who knows what happens after that. But meanwhile, they could have negotiated the Donbass even after the war started. They could have negotiated the Donbass and left it at that. Now they've lost Kherson. What else are they going to lose, you know? The whole thing is just worse and worse for them. But like, oh yeah, no, don't sell out. Be brave. Fight till the end. I see these all the Ukrainian flags on Twitter saying, we've just got to give them more weapons. We just got to send in advisors and to help them fire all these new weapons we're giving them to defeat the Russians and drive them out in a total humiliating defeat. It's like, is that what they really think is going on here? That we're going to escalate this thing that the Russians are about to lose any day now and have to turn tail and run? If only we would step it up a little bit?
I think Zelensky is enjoying his international celebrity status. He's doing his Vogue shoots, photo shoots. He's a new fashion model, apparently. So, he doesn't really have a lot. As long as the U.S. continues to provide this blank check of military support, which to date has included at least $27 billion in direct military support, which I think has been noted on your website, antiwar.com, that we gave South Vietnam, I think, $27 billion. Not $27 billion. I think it was more like $23 billion. So, we've arguably given Ukraine more military aid than we gave Vietnam. South Vietnam, at least in dollar terms. And, the irony is the very people that claim to support Ukraine are the ones that really are responsible for the additional destruction of their Ukrainian cities, tens of thousands of additional Ukrainians. And by the way, President Putin has essentially announced his plan to begin his annexing parts or all of four Ukrainian oblasts within the month of September. So the clock is running out for Ukraine to, agree to a compromise peace deal, which there's a new article today that I think former Chancellor, German Chancellor Schroeder said that he spoke with Putin and Putin is still very interested in a peaceful solution that would be a compromise agreement. But if not, Russia is ready to proceed with popular referendums in all of their occupied territories, in which the entire coastline of Ukraine that they've annexed or they've occupied thus far would be annexed to Russia outright.
Yeah, and who knows? You can't really rely on referendums in such a situation. But anyway, it doesn't matter, right? It's just a step in getting that done. And again, it just didn't have to be this way at all. They could have called this thing off. It's so funny that, I know I'm a ideologically anti-interventionist kind of a guy no matter what, but still just putting on my, regular guy next door neighbor type hat and looking at it. It seems like, wouldn't it be right? It's the expectation of everyone that as soon as this kind of violence breaks out right on Russia's border, and we and our allies are involved, even tangentially, that we would then be doing everything we can to bring the fighting to an end immediately before it escalates out of control, that would be the top priority of everyone, to call time out as fast as possible, right? Is that the wingnut position? Or here we're 5.5 months into this thing, and it's the perfectly normal consensus that, yeah, if anything, we need to do more.
Yeah, it's really sad. Certainly that's the rational position is, our only vital national security interest in Ukraine is to avoid a nuclear war or a third world war with Russia. That's, certainly the position that Reagan would have taken. So many people invoke Reagan as supporting this kind of neoconservative nonsense. And based on, there's no evidence that Reagan would have supported any of it. The bombing of at the Breen Barracks in Beirut occurred in 1982, that killed 241 troops. He didn't send more troops. He pulled them all out. So, that's kind of a myth. But in terms of, Putin being this mad dictator, there's all these articles.
Hey, wait, hold up that last point, because I got something for you here on that.
Okay.
Which is Bush Sr. from August 1st, 1991.
Freedom is not the same as independence. Americans will not support those who seek independence in order to replace a far-off tyranny with a local despotism. They will not aid those who promote a suicidal nationalism based upon ethnic hatred.
That's Bush Sr. from the famous Chicken Kiev speech, warning the Ukrainians that whatever Moscow's point of view is his point of view on their independence. He's actually trying to save the Soviet Union at that point, which is a huge, ridiculous embarrassment. But at the same time, you think about what he's saying there. I don't want to hear a bunch of right-wing ethnic nationalists going to war against Russians in the East and asking America for support. And here he's the former CIA director, so he knows all about America's stay behind type programs in Ukraine, obviously. Knows exactly what he's talking about. And by the way, Condoleezza Rice wrote that speech.
Hang on just one second. Hey, y'all, the audiobook of my book, Enough Already, Time to End the War on Terrorism, is finally done. Yes, of course, read by me. It's available at Audible, Amazon, Apple Books, and soon on Google Play and whatever other options there are out there. It's my history of America's war on terrorism from 1979 through today. Give it a listen and see if you agree. It's time to just come home. Enough already. Time to end the war on terrorism. The audiobook. Hey guys, I've had a lot of great webmasters over the years, but the team at ExpandDesigns.com have by far been the most competent and reliable. Harley Abbott and his team have made great sites for the show and the Institute, and they keep them running well, suggesting and making improvements all along. Make a deal with ExpandDesigns.com for your new business or news site. They will take care of you. Use the promo code SCOTT and save $500. That's ExpandDesigns.com. Man, I wish I was in school so I could drop out and sign up for Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom instead. Tom has done such a great job on putting together a classical curriculum for everyone from junior high schoolers on up through the postgraduate level. And it's all very reasonably priced. Just make sure you click through from the link in the right margin at scotthorton.org. Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. Real history, real economics, real education.
Yeah. Yeah. Zelensky is the despot he's referring to. You know, Zelensky, of course, is not only calling me and all the other much more well-known patriots, elected leaders that are America first, calling them information terrorists and war criminals, you know, subject to war crimes tribunals, but they're also... they're killing their political opponents. You know, he's assassinated hundreds or dozens, if not hundreds, of political opponents. Any Ukrainian who's talked in favor of peace with Russia, some kind of compromise, he's had assassinated or imprisoned. He's even before the war began, he was prosecuting and imprisoning his political opponents. Since the war began, of course, he's outlawed and banned at least 11 opposition political parties. And then all of the main opposition networks, he's converted to, force them by law to broadcast Ukrainian government propaganda 24/7. So it's as if, Trump won the election and he immediately threw Obama and Hillary into prison and then forced CNN and MSNBC to broadcast Fox News, continuously.
Yeah.
And no one seems to care. No, he's the new Churchill. And of course, Churchill, that's a whole other subject because Churchill was one of the greatest war criminals in World War II, responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of innocents.
But that's not what they mean.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it is incredible. It's the narrative building is that on the other side, obviously, if he's doing that to them, he must be, or else why would he be doing it to them? And they're obviously bad guys, or they wouldn't be against him since he's so great, and everybody knows that. And there's a complete little package of thought without having to really know anything at all. Except this is whose side we're on, you know? So then that way, like, thank goodness he shut down all that pro-Russian media in his country, or, you know, whatever frame. You just, as they should say when they say it, beg the question, presume the conclusion that, of course, whoever he's shutting down deserves to be shut down.
It's really Soviet-esque. I mean, Zelensky really is a creature of the Soviet Union. You know, he has, of course, the Ukraine has their own secret service that is modeled after the KGB. And, you know, it's just really a Soviet tradition to jail, prosecute, and assassinate your political opponents and ban opposition parties. So, you know, we're not, the bottom line is as Tulsi Gabbard has stated, Ukraine is not a democracy. You know, it's technically it's an illiberal democracy, but really it's an autocracy that I'd even call a, you know, kind of a stealth dictatorship.
Mm-hmm. And, I read a funny thing that said that, listen, you know, the real difference is here is their billionaires only kind of back one small group of politicians instead of like in America where the billionaires give money to all the different politicians and spread it out, and they all do, and kind of keep it more stable that way. This leads to a lot more infighting. They need to all figure out how to bribe all the politicians a certain percent and learn to share them, you know?
Yeah. And that brings to mind, you know, of course, Hunter Biden and the Biden family's corrupt connect, you know, business ties with Ukraine that arguably may have started this whole mess in the first place. I mean, sure. It's certainly an open question is if he had not had profited by millions of dollars, you know, paid to Hunter, of which, you know, we know Biden typically gets a 10% cut or even 50% based on some stories in Hunter Biden's laptop. You know, it's an open question as to whether he would not have at least said that Ukraine would not join NATO and thus would never join NATO and thus forestalling the Russian invasion in the first place.
Well, and remember why that company Burisma hired Hunter. They hired Hunter because they were in tight with the government that Biden had overthrown. He had, you know, as they say, held the Ukraine brief there right. In the vice president's office under Obama. And when they overthrew the government in 2014, this company, which was led by this guy, Kolomoisky, was one of the major owners of it, said, oh, no, I got to get in good with the new regime so that they don't stick the screws to me, you know? And then, like I say about the oligarchs don't own enough politicians in kind together, you know, the way they do it there. Very unstable. So that was why they said, and then what they do, they hire Yatsenyuk's brother? No, they hired Vice President Biden's son to come and sit on their board to be their insurance policy. And Kofor Black, I think, was on there too, the former CIA officer. Everybody always like leaves him out. But I'm right about that, right?
You are. Yeah. That actually started immediately following the CIA-backed coup of the former pro-Russian president.
Yeah.
That's when it's, you know, all the business contacts began. And they actually, I mean, the kind of language they used was pretty amazing. Just talking about Ukraine and just transforming it along the lines we've seen today. But, you know, I would love for it to be true that we're fighting for democracy in Ukraine. I still wouldn't support it. You know, I condemn in no uncertain terms the illegal aggression, Russian aggression against Ukraine. I want nothing but the best for the Russian or the Ukrainian people and the Russian people, by the way, who are not our enemies. But I think another important point I wanted to make before we go is that, you know, Russia is only our enemy because our policies and our leaders have made it so. Russia, you know, Gorbachev actually told, you know, Secretary of State Baker that he wanted the Soviet Union to join NATO in 1990. Yeltsin brought up the same thing in 91. And then Putin himself, I think it was in 2002, you know, talked about Russia joining NATO and said all he wanted was an invitation. He wasn't going to just beg to join NATO. He wanted a formal invitation to Russia. And, you know, in a perfect world, you know, Russia either, I mean, a perfect world, NATO would be abolished is something I've called for back in 2019. I think Trump was right on that. But the second best option would be for Russia and Ukraine to join NATO simultaneously. And then, you know, for all this, that would pretty much end the Russian threat. It would break up the alliance between Russia and China and would really go far, I think, to advance not only European security, but U.S. national security as well.
Yeah. I want to give you a chance to reiterate what you mentioned there, too, as you do say in the article, where you say that you strongly support Ukraine's right to defend itself, and you even say that you support America sending humanitarian-type assistance and all that kind of thing. So I know that people, as you know, as sort of the basis of this whole conversation, never mind the smears and blacklists, people right. just kind of presume. If you're explaining another side of the story, you have some loyalty to it. And here, you know, obviously used to work at the Pentagon, and we're speaking from an American national interest kind of point of view here. But even beyond that, in the actual fight itself, you claim your sympathy with the Ukrainian side, not with the Russian side. You're just being honest about what the damn problem is here. That's all.
Exactly. And no matter how much the Ukrainian government tries to demonize me, or if they were to target me for assassination, my position wouldn't change. I still support, Ukrainian national independence. I want to negotiate the best deal we possibly can for Ukraine to preserve as much of their territory as possible. It's not about some kind of bias. My only bias, like Senator Rand Paul, is to support what's best for the national security of the United States of America. And that doesn't mean all these endless and unnecessary wars, which we saw so much of in the 20th century and since. Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you also say here, when I was paraphrasing, I left out the part where you say here, from Russia's continuing illegal war of aggression, which is an important point that, should not be lost on anyone here. And I agree with you that America absolutely put them up to this, or, pushed them into this corner. But, I think a fair analogy would be, if somebody's poking you in the chest, you might have the right to knock their block off, but that doesn't mean you definitely should, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I think that they had other options here. But I want to point out, as Joe Cirincione did such a great job of explaining, that Putin was deliberately invoking American exceptions to the law in his declaration of war in February, where he essentially paraphrased Bill Clinton over Kosovo, Bush over Iraq War II, and Obama over Libya, by saying, in Obama's case, we have to protect this ethnic minority that's being persecuted. In Bush's case, we have to preempt these weapons of mass destruction. And in Obama's case, the responsibility to protect, again, this civilian population that's being massacred, a genocide, he claimed. And then that was enough. But he was obviously being cheeky. For God's sake, he was, essentially mocking America and saying, this is what you guys say when you break the law and launch a war. So that's what I say, too. And I don't know if any of the Americans even noticed, other than critics, but I don't think anybody in the war party even saw the irony in it at all.
Yeah, I noticed that right away. He used the exact same words as President George W. Bush when he said, we're sending our military to enforce the peace. How do you start a war? How is enforcing the peace starting a war? It's very Orwellian.
Yep.
And of course, we found out that the weapons of mass destruction, didn't technically exist, but the very fact, he said that there were weapons of mass destruction being created with U.S. assistance. And we found, weeks later, the U.S. government admitted the existence of 26 U.S. funded biolabs in Ukraine. So,
Although I don't think they're really weapons lab. I don't know. I need to learn more about that. I know actually Dave DeCamp at antiwar.com has done all the best work on that, and I should shut up until I've read it all very carefully. But I do know that, Zelensky had said, well, maybe we'll just get out of the Budapest, stop abiding by our promises in the Budapest memorandum. In other words, maybe we'll start making nukes, which, of course, they have no capability of doing in any reasonable amount of time before they get invaded or anything like that anyway. So why did he even say that other than to give Putin a pretext to attack,
Yeah. And this the crazy thing is, when Putin said that, and not only was it reminiscent of Bush, but the very fact that it was an illegal war of aggression was very reminiscent of the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003, which really had no rational justification at all.
Yep.
Saddam hadn't committed any new international aggression. He destroyed all of his weapons of mass destruction under per UN mandates. So both wars, I think, were equally unjustifiable. And I think, as you pointed out on this show, the war in Iraq actually has killed far more people than the war in Ukraine has thus far.
Yeah, right. So, and in fact, George Bush himself couldn't help but notice the similarity. I still can't figure out who decided to put him out there to criticize another country for starting a war, but he just couldn't do it without implicating himself. And yeah. In fact, he even says, after he noticed, oops, I said Iraq, and then he says Iraq too, which, hey, he didn't mean Putin also is guilty for that. He meant that's also an illegal aggressive war too. And yeah. So he was admitting it right there, you know? That was as close as you could get to a confession in open court kind of a thing.
Yeah.
That war crime.
It's all right.
Yep. And then everybody laughed, and they were like, ah, we forgive you, George. It's okay. and he laughed, and then it was over.
Yeah, I would have loved to be a fly on the wall in that room because I think a lot of them were kind of surprised, wondering if he was going to, realizing the irony, I guess, in that statement. But, I strongly oppose the Iraq war as well. I've been very consistent. You know, I don't oppose all wars. I certainly think some were justified. I think World War I especially, we could have stayed out. World War II, we could have stayed out if FDR just hadn't provoked the Japanese to attack. I think it's really essential, especially now in Taiwan. And I know we probably don't have time to get into the Taiwan crisis, but it's really essential we avoid a great power nuclear superpower war, which no one, certainly we have no hope of winning.
Yeah, we really are in trouble. We got essentially this massive imperial ship, but it doesn't seem like anybody's driving. I mean, maybe like Sullivan and Blinken and Austin together we're going to read a Woodward book later that says these three guys more or less were sort of in charge, but it sort of seems like nobody's in charge. And it seems like to turn the thing around, to call any kind of screeching halt, we'd have to rewind time and go back and hire Ron Paul in 2008 or something. I mean, who's going to do it now? Gavin Newsom? Or Ron DeSantis, who's going to move America's capital to Jerusalem? I mean, yeah. Man, well, we're really screwed.
Well, if only we could have Tulsi Gabbard as the Democrat presidential nominee. That, if we had an America First, kind of anti-war candidate like Rand Paul on one side and Tulsi Gabbard on the other, then we'd have two Ukrainian information terrorists running, and it would be a win-win for peace and freedom worldwide.
Wouldn't that be amazing to have a couple of candidates who are not too bad and that you could actually like settle for, and then they run against each other in a real like in their war of words in their campaigns, they're really trying to outdo each other for who's better instead of who's worse on everything,
Yeah. Yeah, it's instead of being the the least of the two evils, we could have the least of the two goods,
Or the best of the two goods, even.
The best of the two.
Settle for the least of the two goods, and it'd be all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, we can fantasize all day. We'll probably not ever see anything like that in my lifetime, but it would be cool. And you know what? Hey. If people can get their head together, it's obviously the right thing to do. If the establishment says never Tulsi, maybe Democrats should listen to her. It's possible.
Yeah, they absolutely should. And diplomacy does not equal appeasement. We hear that from the neocons like Lindsey Graham, criticizing Biden for being too much of an appeaser, too weak on China or Russia. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, Hillary called Gabbard a traitor while she's currently serving National Guard major even on an overseas deployment and had to come home before she could respond. Like, geez, somebody tell what is it? The NCIS or whatever. That's the wrong service. You know what I mean?
Yeah. She's an Iraq war hero, a serving lieutenant colonel in the reserves. There's no way, you know, she could possibly be accused of being anything other than a true America First patriot.
Yeah, that's amazing. And they got away with that, too.
Yeah.
You know, that hurt. That did not hurt the accusers. That hurt the accused. When Hillary Clinton, of all people, made that claim. It's just amazing to think that that could stick in anyone's head. Like, well, geez, if Hillary Clinton says so, it probably is right.
Yeah. Well, the one consolation we have on that front is that if she hadn't voted for the Iraq war, she would have defeated Obama and became for the presidential nomination of the Democrat Party and would have been elected president in 2008. So,
and then we'd all be dead by now. So and it would have passed without her, because Kerry and Daschle and them were going to, you know, make sure anyway. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good point. All right. Well, we'd all be better off if she was never born, but it is what it is. All right, everybody. That's David Pine. Find him again at dpine.substack.com and at the National Interest. He's got a really good one here, How Biden Can End the War in Ukraine. And check out his response to the Ukrainian government decision to include him on a list of 28 high-profile Americans accused of promoting Russian propaganda narratives. Thank you again, David.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
The Scott Horton Show, Anti-War Radio, can be heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, APSradio.com, antiwar.com, scotthorton.org, and libertarianinstitute.org.